philosophers in
space, 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 space.
Let us cavort like the Greeks of old.
You know the ones I mean.
It's not an easy thing to meet your maker.
No, no, no. They work for each other in exchange for money, which they then...
Well, that just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
Eek, barbadurkles.
You sure that's the point, Doctor? Of course. What else could it be? That you should never tell the same lie twice.
Hello and welcome to Philosophers in Space. This is episode 77. I'm Thomas. That over there is Aaron. And anybody else here?
Maybe.
Feels a little crowded. Hey, it's Callie. How you doing, Callie?
It's Callie. Callie is constantly running from existential crisis to existential crisis. I'm fine. It's good. We're good.
Notice the oxygen levels were a little low in the tin can up here. So that accounts for it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks
Excited
for having
to
me.
Talk about Deep Space Nine. Some more awful goblin stories. favorite. Hideous, horrible goblins that I have to watch every once in a while.
We have to be respectful of the horrible goblins today because
I'm so offended.
We're honoring right. one of them this particular episode.
Sorry. Maybe not the best start to the eulogy. Let me try this again. You played a horrible goblin.
Yeah.
No, I can't do it. So it's only horrible goblins.
No. I'm going to step in here because we thought this would be a good episode to do because the actor who played Nog in DS9, Aaron Eisenberg, passed away recently. And so we thought it would be good to do an episode in honor of him and the character Nog, who I think is one of the best, like grows in a more interesting way than almost any characters in the Star Trek universe.
Hard agree.
That, we have our expert in the room here, Callie, to give us lots of background on this character and this world and the people involved with making these characters that we love so much.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I could make it this time, Callie, but I don't know that you should be glad that I... I'll try. Okay. In light of the funeral proceedings here, I'll try to be respectful of the show. I actually really liked Nog. It was an interesting storyline, and I don't know. That's all I got. That's all I can say. You can't say something nice, then
tell Brian to punch it in my exposition zone.
Oh yeah, let's do so. That'll get things in the right direction. Let's hop into the exposition zone, Brian. Punch it!
Everybody hold on to something.
There's something you can't do.
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Okay, here we are, expositioning. Yeah, and Callie, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, so the episode again is Heart of Stone, Season 3, Episode 14 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And this episode is interesting because in a lot of episodic television, but Star Trek especially, if the A story is not strong enough and there's not quite enough material... Sometimes there's a B story and even a C story sometimes, right? So we're now used to like anthology-based TV where there's like seven stories going on all at once, you know, from episode to episode. But Star Trek didn't start out as a show like that. DS9 gets there the last two seasons or so. But in this episode, we're actually going to be breaking down the B story because the A story, I don't hate it quite as much as most of Star Trek fandom does, but it's not the best. And in this episode, I think the B story is far stronger and has implications for Nog that make him one of Star Trek's best characters, hands down. So for background, when Nog is introduced, he is like the station's ne'er-do-well. He's the nephew of the guy who runs the bar on the station, and he basically does nothing but like steal stuff and cause mischief and play pranks, and he's a really bad influence on Jake Sisko, which is the station commander's son. And so he's painted very much as this like teenage outcast, like not quite a villain, but he's definitely there to just like be annoying and cause trouble kind of person. Mm-hmm. And so in this episode, he starts to turn that around. And when the episode opens, Nog is in ops and he's talking to Chief O'Brien, and he's trying to convince Chief O'Brien to let him in to see Commander Sisko, because he needs to talk about something urgent with Commander Sisko. And he's got his hands on a bag, and so, you know, Sisko says, yeah, let him in. And so Nog gets in and sets the bag down on the table and opens it up, and it's a bag full of gold pressed latinum, which is the currency that Ferengi use.
My notes just said goblin nonsense, but okay, sure, if you want to.
We explained the gold pressed latinum to you on the NASA episode. You know the rules.
I refuse to acknowledge that or to keep the information in my brain, because it's goblin trinkets of various kinds.
It's gold pressed latinum, Thomas, and it's very important to Nog.
You know Huggle from Labyrinth is like all the rings he has. It's just,
you know, the Jews from Jewry.
It's his treasure.
Yeah.
So Nog explains to Commander Sisko that he's trying to purchase an internship or apprenticeship, because he's now considered an adult and he has to purchase an apprenticeship from a mentor to teach him how to do something. And Nog has decided that he wants to join Starfleet.
Side note, I do like, that's a good thing that, like, you know, our capitalistic society, it's gone from like, oh, low paid intern to no non-paid intern, but you get the experience. And in the hyper-capitalistic goblin society, whatever mm-hmm. they are.
Ferengi.
What the hell are they called?
The Ferengi.
Ferengi. In the hyper-capitalist Ferengi society, they're like, oh no, you pay the guy to be an indentured servant. That's how it
right.
works. I like it.
Yeah.
It's good. That part, consistent.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, and it's funny, like, finding out the reason why Nog wants to do this is like, he actually like wants to break away from that system, but like, he doesn't know how to participate
right.
in something without doing the thing that necessitates participation in that system by buying the apprenticeship. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. But Captain Sisko's like, what the H, dude? Like, that it just doesn't work that way. And Nog's like, you know, like, I want to pick up a uniform. And Commander, I keep calling him Captain Sisko because eventually he's captain, but he's a commander in this episode.
Yeah, be precise here. It's important.
But, I mean, I wasn't going to call you out on it, but that was a total amateur move. But okay, I'll let it slide.
Oh, okay, Mr. Like, can't remember who the Ferengi are. Let's not.
I'm unsure I am which going show to win. We're talking about right now, actually. That's how little I know about.
So in a Star Trek contest, I am going to win that every time, my friend. Don't test
That's
me.
That's kind of the joke, Callie. I'm not a major Trekkie. I have watched like half of the original and like half of the Next Generation. So I've seen some Trek,
some stuff,
but haven't.
I've seen some things, man.
Seen some shit. anyway. Just where I am.
But yeah, it's all good. So Commander Sisko explains to Nog that because he's not a Federation citizen and the Ferengi aren't members of the Federation, that he has to have a letter of recommendation from a command level officer in order to even apply to Starfleet Academy. And Nog is like, cool, so you'll write me a letter then. And Sisko's like,
Sisko's
not so
like,
sure
engage
about that.
Racism. Right.
We've never had one of your kind at Starfleet.
Yeah. Right. Nog is really trying to lean in, and Sisko's like, no, not a good reference.
Yeah. No, no, that's good.
Right. Didn't work.
Prove to me that this is not a grift. Prove that this is not a grift. That's what this story is about, right? He should have just been like, oh, you're going to cancel me? It's cancel culture. Is that what's going on here?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, in the whole, like, the whole time during this conversation, they're like pushing the bag of latinum back and forth across the desk,
which is good prop comedy. I'll give them credit for that.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely. And Aaron really, I feel like, sells it where he's like, oh, I left it. Did I? It's a gift. Yeah, he's good.
Yep, exactly. Like, we're just going to forget about that bag of latinum on the table, and I'm just going to slowly.
Which is great, because, like, Sisko lives in a post-scarcity society. He's like, this is a bag of metal. Like, what am I going
to
do with
this? That's what I was about to say. Like, what does he, right. what does he care about it? But
right, yeah. exactly. And then they cut to the terrible A story. Then the next time we see this part
Which
of the
sucks,
story.
Because, like, that's all I want to talk about.
Maybe.
Because it's so dumb.
Maybe we can make fun of the A story after dark.
Hey, let's save it for after dark. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Talk of give it a nice rock hard after dark.
Oh, good.
Pun.
Good.
It's just a pun.
Yeah, it's great. And so the next scene we see Nog hanging out behind the bar at Quark's working on a replicator, and Jake walks up all funny, like wink, wink, nod, nod. Gosh, that was a funny joke you tried to play on my dad. And Nog gets super pissed off. Like, you didn't tell your dad this was a joke, did you? And Jake was like, yeah, like, of course it was a joke. And
I just want to note, Callie, I love this, and I'm enjoying this so much. I think you're actually going to more detail than the show even goes into. you're bringing in the history from other galaxies and stuff. Now, you see, here's the culture.
Yeah, really unpacking it.
It's amazing. It's actually super cool. And I feel I already understand the show that I watched better. Because I didn't know all the backdrop of everything, but
this is why you bring me on the show.
Yeah, sounds like you're a fan. Are you?
Yeah,
fan?
That to put it lightly. Yeah,
gotcha.
And so Nog is just like super pissed off and indignant, and Jake's like, okay, like you're obviously playing a joke. My dad's a really smart guy, and whatever you're trying to pull, he's gonna figure it out. And Nog keeps like pushing back, like, no, this is not a joke. I want to join Starfleet. And then Jake asks him why. And Nog just keeps saying that, like, it's personal and I don't want to talk about it. And it's personal. And then he just kind of like brushes him off, like, look, I'm busy. I'm trying to fix this replicator. You can, is kind of how that scene ends.
Can a replicator make another replicator? Can you just be like, computer, make a replicator? Done.
You know, that's actually a that's a point of contention, because I don't know that that's ever been discussed.
Thomas immediately regrets asking the question.
Are you kidding? Now all I want to do is that, like, it's my new life's goal to ask an interesting Star Trek question to Callie.
All right.
And Callie will be, I can tell you're the biggest fan. And I'm the same way with certain things, where it's like, I don't even care if someone's pulling my leg. Like, I'm going to answer the question, and I'm going to go into detail.
I don't even
about
have time to tell you.
I like to talk about it.
I don't even have time to tell you why you're wrong. No way. I definitely have time.
God help you if you ever ask me anything about the Klingon language. God. I'm just saying. When
speaking of horrible goblins, I guess that's a different kind of horrible.
I think
goblin.
We should collaborate on a paper about the Klingon ethics. I think that would be really valuable contribution to society.
Side note, when I did watch that original series, I love back then the Klingons was just like there's almost no makeup. It's just a white dude with some shit on his face.
Yep.
And that was a Klingon. And then it like evolved later on. It's kind of funny.
Yep. And they make a joke about it at one point during Deep Space Nine, because they run into those Klingons and somebody's like, Worf, what's up with that? And Worf's like, we don't talk about it.
Yep.
That's actually legitimately funny.
That's a really good time.
And then in Star
episode,
Trek Enterprise, they end up explaining it. Yeah.
It's like, just that's back from the low budget days. Just
we're going to do that episode at some point, actually. So that one's one to start store away for later.
Here's the thing. I'm usually so good at staying on topic, but when we're talking about Star Trek, exactly. I am the easiest person in the world to distract with something shiny. I just need y'all to know
that. So where were we?
Let's pick up.
Do you ever get that replicator fixed? That was a C story that we didn't ever find out. Hopefully they fixed it. No resolution there. Left this reviewer cold.
It's a running gag, that replicator, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. So the next time we see this, side note, this is one point in Deep Space Nine that gives me a little bit of happiness, because they refer to a man being pregnant. It's like an establishing shot where Commander Sisko and Dr. Bashir just like walking along the promenade, just like making small talk. And they just happen to mention that this no-name ensign is budding, and Sisko's like, oh, he's pregnant. Ah, oh, we need to throw him a baby shower. And it's just really fun that like they're talking about a man being pregnant in the 90s, and that's cool. Hmm. But anyways, as they're walking along the promenade, Nog runs upstairs and he runs and he's like, "Hey, so like you're gonna write me that letter, right?" And this is when Cisco's full like "I don't like you people" kind of stuff comes out a little bit. And like, and in fairness, his skepticism is kind of warranted, right? Because Nog has not been the best actor on DS9. That's probably a bad word to use. He's not
actually
been.
Actually, is a really good actor, right. I thought. It did a good job.
The best ethical agent.
But you mean behaviorally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's, you know, very early on, one of the first times we get to see Nog doing anything, he's like playing a prank on people and like making them change color and making them itchy and stuff like that. And he's just kind of been a pain in the ass for like Commander Sisko and Odo, the chief of security, and just been like a giant pain in everyone's ass. And like all of a sudden he wants to join Starfleet. Mm-hmm. So like it's not entirely wrong for them to be skeptical, I don't think. And so I think they don't say this explicitly, but I think what's going on here is that Sisko is like, yeah, you know what? Like, I need to give this kid a chance because I'm maybe kind of being unfair, as you know, he's getting older. Maybe he's maturing a little bit and I should at least give him a shot. And so we see a scene of Commander Sisko and Dax in Sisko's office and says, "Hey, I want to do an inventory of this cargo bay." And Dax is like, "We did that like last week." And, but like, cool, we'll do it. Whatever. I'll get a crew assigned. And Cisco's like, "Actually, I want to have Nog do it." And of course, Jadzia turns on the skepticism too. And Cisco's like, "Oh yeah, like I want to give the kid a chance. I want to see what he can do." And you know, no help, no interference, no one's looking over his shoulder. And then that's actually when Dax mentions that they've already taken inventory of the cargo bay. And of course, like, "Oh, cool. So that way we'll know if he steals anything." Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so they send him in by himself, and they basically it's a good old classic ethics test, right? To put somebody in a situation with no oversight and see if they still do the right thing.
Yep.
So it's just like the racist, like, "Oh, really? You're one of the good ones? Well, what if I leave my purse over here?"
Right. You gotta ruin everything. Yeah, it is similar to that.
I'm gonna leave my very expensive watch just hanging out on the table here. See what happens.
Right, and he doesn't steal the watch, which is good, right? And he ends up, right?
Yeah.
And then we get one final scene,
we see,
right?
So we see Nog and Dax in the cargo bay, and it's, you know, they do a wide shot, I think, like to purposely give you the idea of like how big this cargo bay is and how much stuff is in it. And Dax is like, "Yeah, we want you to inventory this whole thing." And he's like, "By myself? Okay. Like, how long do I have?" And she's like, "Well, we need it by tomorrow morning." And he's like, "We'll have it tonight." And obviously everyone's skeptical, but then it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a really good job. And in, I think they said it was 5 hours or something like that,
mm-hmm.
which is they don't say how long it should have taken, but they're obviously very surprised by how short an amount of time it's taken. And then, you know, Sisko kind of under his breath off to the side is like, "And you know, like, nothing went missing." Right?
All the purses and where they're supposed to be.
My watch is still, yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then Dax, of course, is like, "Actually he found some stuff we missed in our last inventory."
More piles of goblins.
More of that metal bullcrap or. Yeah.
No, not Latinum. That's money. They don't keep that in the cargo bay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's not how it works. And
what about a big Trek. Cube of it? That's so big that.
No,
don't want to get. Never mind. I don't want to get you started. No. There'll probably be another. Well, they did that. You see, in this other episode,
we have philosophy to do. But we get one final scene, right, where he still is like pushing him on it too, even though he successfully completed the cargo bay test.
I know. So the captain set about this challenge for him to meet, and the, or whatever is he a captain? Whatever he is, the boss,
commander,
man, commander guy, president of the.
Boss Hog, the boss hog of DS9.
He's the CEO or whatever. And he set about this task, and then the little guy does it, little awful goblin does it, and he's like, well, cool, we got that work we didn't need done, and now I'm still not giving you a chance. And you think it's going to be, I think they're trying to set it up like some sort of, you know, Willy Wonka, you lose! You still, you know, at the end, and then they're going to have a heart-to-heart, and he's going to be like, Nog, you did it! Is that right? Is that pretty much what it was, right?
Well, so this is a thing that Sisko likes to do, is he tries to, it's kind of like the Sisko. Idea of, yeah, it's classic Sisko. it's like going to boot camp, right? They try to break you down so you, like, they get, like, the purest version of you, and they break you down and build you up, and they, like, rattle your cage and whatever, and... So, because at the end of that scene with Dax, you hear Sisko say, like, cool, so, like, we know he's a hard worker, we know he does this stuff, but also, like, I still don't know why this kid wants to join Starfleet Academy. Because, like, even Dax points out at one time, like, you know, being in Starfleet is not just, like, exploration and science and all this fun stuff. Like, sometimes it's just really hard work. And I think what Sisko is trying to get at here is that, like, being good at inventorying the cargo bay shows me something cool, but it's not the most important thing. And if I don't know why you actually want to join Starfleet, I don't know. I still am not sure that I want to stick my reputation.
Yeah, but he's the one who came up with that stupid test. So why is he, you know, like, well, then come up with a different test if you wanted to evaluate him.
Well, I think the idea was that was an easy test for him to fail, and then there was always going to be that second, okay, like, but I still have to figure out why he's there. And so this is what happens in this scene is he calls Nog into his office to tell him just like, sorry, I'm not going to do it. I can't risk my reputation for you. And there's this back and forth, and Nog starts to get really upset, and Sisko, like, reaches down and, like, puts his hands on Nog's arm, like, why? What are you doing? Why do you want this? And then Nog finally comes out with it. I don't want to end up like my father. And then, of course, like, the whole mood changes, and, you know, Rom, Nog's dad, throughout, you know, in the first episode, he was kind of played like the classic, like, trying to be a Ferengi troublemaker. But they kind of play him as, like, the lovable oaf throughout most of the series. But, like, you find out that he's a mechanical genius. Like, he's a great engineer. He's really good at fixing things. He's really smart. But he's a Ferengi, so he's supposed to go into business. That's what Ferengi do. And because he wasn't good at that, he's not a good Ferengi. He's not successful. And so Nog basically says, like, look, the only thing that my dad has to look forward to in life is maybe, hopefully, inheriting Quark's bar if Quark dies. And Nog wants more for himself than that. He doesn't have the lobes for business either. He says, I have my father's hands and I have my uncle's tenacity, and I want to be a part of something that's important and something bigger than myself. And I don't want to end up like my dad. And it's this really wonderful moment. And the acting in this is so good, I think. And I think maybe just because I kind of deeply identify with that, like, desire to not be the thing that you're supposed to be. And that's honestly the reason that Nog means a lot to me, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, after this back and forth, Sisko's finally like, all right, cool. I'll write the letter. I want you to have the chance to do that. Now that you've been honest with me about what you're doing, I'll give you that chance. And then, of course, he does the, but there's still a lot of work to do. You know, like, you're not getting your uniform today kind of thing.
Yeah. And then we get a montage of a, no, we didn't, but there should have been.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a multi-episode montage of little scenes here and there of him, like, push-ups, damn shuttlecraft tests. And yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
I bet he aces the hearing test.
Oh, absolutely. Good ears.
Yeah. All right. So I got to cut in here, I think, with a little bit of philosophy. No, I think it was really good, especially the description of that one particular moment, because that's that particular moment that made me want to pair this together with a discussion of deontology as one of the major fields of ethics, because I think I can make a case that Nog is sort of your quintessential deontological individual and wants to sort of be driven by the moral law, and that shows up in later episodes as well. So let me start with a little background on basic ethics stuff. We've talked about utilitarianism on this show when we did Brave New World. And we've talked about virtue theory on this show in the form of Buddhist virtue theory with Groundhog Day. One of the other major theories within ethics is deontology, which is a gross word that like basically means the study of duty or obligation. It's often sort of synonymous with non-consequentialist rule-based ethics. So by which I mean it's often put in contrast with utilitarian style ethics. So like if utilitarians are the ends justify the means, deontologists are often some form of some means can never be justified by any amount of good ends. So this is a theory that obviously Thomas and I have talked about some before because I think Thomas is more sympathetic to the utilitarian bent of things, but I wanted to get into it because I think there is some interesting insights in especially certain forms of deontology that relate to what's going on in this particular episode. So, yep.
Well, and I think that kind of speaks to Starfleet's philosophy generally, right? Because they're so predicated on what their ethics and their values are. And I mean, that's so much of what Star Trek is about, right? Is like, you know, do we compromise our values? And does that make us inherently bad to, it's kind of a utilitarianism versus deontology thing, I feel like, is so much of the conflict in Star Trek.
Absolutely. Right. In the background of like any prime directive question is, do we stick to our ethical rules or do we try to maximize the good in that particular case?
And the answer is the prime directive always sucks. Therefore,
well, the answer is that utilitarianism. The answer is that there's a tension here that can't be easily resolved with any, I think, absolute certainty or perfect resolution into a like consistent system in all cases, because you really do have this tension between the desire to produce the best outcomes in terms of things like well-being for people and the desire to respect people's personal autonomy, which is a big thing in deontology, the desire to respect personal freedom, the desire to, and some of the forms of deontology get a little bit more specific than that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Kantian deontology. This is really kind of the ethics of Vulcans, I think, in a lot of ways. It's the ethics of be the most rational that you can be, and that the most rational you can be is to follow the moral law. So when I hear Nog talking about he doesn't want to be driven by greed and like suffer because he's driven by that Ferengi kind of animalistic nature, I think Kant would say it's a very animalistic kind of society that the Ferengi have. What he wants is to be acting from a place of duty, and that sense of acting based on a law that you can understand, that is comprehensible to you, and that you choose in that sense is better than just being sort of buffeted around by animal preferences.
And it makes sense based on what we know about his character, right? Because he's so young when DS9 starts that obviously like Starfleet officers are probably going to be his first exposure to that kind of thing, and seeing how they like love each other and support each other and have these relationships. Like it makes total sense that that would be something that is super appealing to him. And therefore like, that's how I want to exercise these values in my life because they were handed to me by this group of people.
Yeah. But I think if we go along with the Star Trek universe here and consider that like these things that we would consider vices or virtues to them, to this entire goblin culture, that's going to look a lot different. You know, that's like if for us it was like, I don't know, bravery and honesty and something, and then someone else is like, well, I don't want to be brave or honest. I want to lie and be a coward. We're like, what are you talking about? That's not the right thing to do. You know, like that should be the equivalent that we're looking at if we're going to treat this this culture the way it's portrayed in the show. So it's kind of interesting to think of it from that direction. When we think about like virtue ethics or whatever, it is kind of relative to the things that your society finds virtuous.
Yeah, I think you could very well say that the Ferengi are in one sense a kind of deontologists. It's just that their deontology is centered around profit, all right, and like rules for the proper acquisition, like being a right person with regard to profit, as opposed instead of being a right person with regard to what Kant thinks is important, which is the true moral law that exists out there in the world. Yeah, and I think this is also an important point because it gets into the question of inclination, which especially Kantian deontologists are concerned about. A big question in all of ethics is, how do we motivate people to be consistently ethical? So, right, the utilitarians think if we make people really genuinely concerned about consequences, then they will act ethically most of the time. The virtue theorists think we have to habituate people to be ethical by, you know, at practicing ethical behaviors consistently. The deontologists, especially Kant, think that the way to make people ethical is to teach them the rational truth of what is ethical, and that that will be the thing that motivates them, specifically because he's very concerned about relying on personal inclination as the motivator for ethics, because inevitably personal inclination fails. So that's the point of the cargo bay test, is like, what happens when someone is in that kind of situation? And Kant thinks unless they fully understand their sense of duty and have you know, chosen to act based on duty, they will do the wrong thing in that moment. So, and like, I would say, to push back a little bit here, I think he's misguided about human psychology in a big way. Like, I think just understanding rationality is not, in fact, going to be the most reliable motivator to get human beings to act ethically in these kind of ring of gaijis. What happens if no one knows, if no one can catch you, would you do the wrong thing? Kinds of situations. I think like the virtue theorists are a lot closer in the way that we habituate people. And there are other things that I think are potentially wrong with, that deontology faces its own problems, of course, like all views. Another objection is in its fixation on rationally following the moral law, it can tend to become rigid and fixate on the law at the cost of good outcomes or good behavior, some might even argue. So in a later episode with Nog, he's Jake's roommate, and like he's been at Academy, and he's this like super annoying rules lawyer-y, do the right thing all of the time kind of person. And it feels very much to me like what happens if someone like goes too far down the deontological direction of like being obsessed with just following the rules and doing the right thing, and that, you know, it has bad consequences, like you can never lie or something like that in that extreme form.
Yeah, that's, and I don't know, I just keep thinking about you know, I don't know that Nog is thinking quite that deeply about all of this either in this situation, because I really think that he's just like, look, doing this brought my father to a dead end. He's miserable and he has no future, and I want a future. And the, you know, the thing that's available to me to escape that is Starfleet. And, you know, obviously like on a place like Deep Space Nine, that's not the only sort of cultural reference that he would have. Like, he would have exposure to Klingons and, Bolians and Bajorans and all of that sort of stuff. So like, it's not like that's the only thing that's available to him, but I feel like that's probably his main exposure, and probably his first exposure to a culture that's like wildly varied from his own. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I feel like it's more just like, I think this is the easiest path for me to have a future that that matters more than making a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that like I'm reading more into his character. I'm sort of reading my own kind of philosophical, like, what do these heroic archetypes mean to me? As Thomas will agree, I always put things into archetypal terms like this, right? Yeah.
Well, you always add in at least 25%,
at least
of stuff,
a bunch of, at least three or four extra layers of meta plot. But yeah, like, I do think, again, coming back to his fear of being at the whims of profit or loss of profit, like, another big draw Kant thinks for deontology is that it can protect you from the sort of luck of consequences. By, it's similar to the way Socrates thinks that like, if you're virtuous, no true harm can come to you, that like, if you know Kant believes that the rational will, trying to do the right thing, is in itself the greatest end in itself. It's the greatest good there is in the world, right? There's nothing better than someone trying as hard as they can to be good and do good. And he thinks that you can get that even if all of the consequences go poorly. That, like, we would still have so much love and praise for someone who tries to do the right thing, even if it has no positive results at the end of the day. So in that sense, it can free us from the attachment to actual profit and consequences.
Yeah, well, and Nog does get there, too, because, like, there's, you know, later episodes where, you know, he's totally buying into, like, the Starfleet way, and there are people who are, like, pushing back on him, and he's like, you don't understand honor and duty and all of the things that make up a soldier's life. Like, you don't get it. He's going on, you know, he's going on in this really dangerous mission, and Quark is like, what the hell is wrong with you? What are you thinking? Like, this is not what Ferengi do. And Nog's like, yeah, like, but that's not what I do, because I'm Starfleet and I have a duty and I have honor and I'm a soldier and I'm, like, wedded to these values. And so he does get there.
I think it's cute that we, like, sort of believe in, like, the grand scheme of shows like this, that, like, when you have the good and evil sort of trying to attract each other, like, you know, is Nog going to corrupt Jake, or is Jake going to, like, somehow bring Nog to the good side? What we see over the plot course of these plots is the Ferengi, who I think are sort of viewed in a negative light, all come to see things, I feel like, in Starfleet kinds of ways that, like, right. So Rom turns into a thoroughgoing Marxist, which we haven't done an episode on that yet, but we're going to have to get to that soon. Right. And even, even Quark sort of plays his role in helping sort of the good guys win out in the end. So, you know, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Quark grows, but he's still a pretty hardcore capitalist at the end, because he's basically like, I don't want any of this bullshit new Ferenginar, Rom. You're the perfect person for it. You can have it. It's all
like
yours.
Like a Joe Biden-y kind of, we'll say.
Right. Also in his questionable treatment of women.
Exactly.
So they have that in common, too.
Yep.
But I feel like that just shows kind of the biases of who's writing the show. It's like, oh, sure, there's this alien race whose entire planet revolves around this one thing that they all care about, but give them a few minutes around us and they'll be totally changed.
That's why all these shows are a neoliberal wet dream.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much like valid critique of Starfleet as an imperialist organization, and the Federation more broadly as an imperialist organization. That's all pretty valid in my mind.
And there's often, you know, that stuff can come about as a result of these deontological kinds of views. Like if you get too caught up in thinking that all that matters are people who are truly rational and that people who can't act rationally. Like, so for example, Kant was not great with regard to animals, because animals can't be rational followers of the moral law. They aren't an end in themselves in the way that humans are. And so while we should treat them indirectly as morally concerning agents, we don't have to actually treat them as independent autonomous agents in any way or respect their autonomy. So there are ways that deontology can run astray that lead into sort of imperializing yourself over others.
Yeah, well, because I'm thinking about all of the different episodes that are like, is this thing a sentient being? It's probably not, because it doesn't function like we do. And, like, there's just so much in there.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think, Thomas? You converted to some deontology yet? Have I made you a pluralist, at least?
Oh, thank God, I thought you were going to ask if I was converted to DS9. I was
the other D thing.
Prepared to try to be as diplomatic as I could. I don't know. This debate will rage on, because I still think it's all consequences. But anyway. Okay, so I think we should do the things we do every episode, right?
Yes, we should.
Why don't we thank our patrons? And you can tell us what our top patrons are having you say this week.
Yeah, thanks to our 25-tier strong AI patrons. I wish I could afford more utils. You think this universe is bad, you should see some of the others. V. Frank, Corey Ebert, Winchesters Never Die, PKD is my favorite racist sci-fi author, HPL is a close second, that's a quality one, and buy more pills, buy more pills, buy more pills. I think we get some Wilhelm screams in for that one. And very special most utils, thanks to our $50 tier, definitely, absolutely not a clone patrons, Philip Gatt. Jonathan Steele is a great dad fund, and money for utils, capitalism at its finest. Thank you all so, so much. We couldn't do this without you.
And Aaron, can you give us a little preview for next week's show?
Yeah, we're going to do, it's going to be sort of a two-parter with two short stories that are connected. So we'll start off with the classic Ursula K. Le Guin's The Ones Who Walk Away from Amalas, and we'll talk about distribution ethics. It'll be tied to, in a lot of ways, what we've been talking about here with the deontological stuff. And then we'll do an episode after that called The Ones, I believe it's called The Ones Who Stay and Fight, which is another Jemisin short story that's supposed to sort of develop off of the ideas. So yeah.
Oh, awesome. Sounds fun. And Callie, thanks so much for joining us. Do you want to toss out your plugs?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. The show is called Queersplaining, queersplaining.com, or anywhere you find podcasts.
And you had a special plug.
So there was a convention in Albany last October that a bunch of the Star Trek actors were at, and none of them got paid. The guy who ran the convention basically just decided to stiff everyone. And J.G. Hertzler, the actor who played Martok, happens to also live in New York, was able to take the guy to small claims court and won a settlement and got paid. None of the other actors that were there have gotten paid. And so there's a GoFundMe that has been started to get those folks paid. Aaron Eisenberg, the actor who played Nog, was one of the people who didn't get paid. And there's a GoFundMe that there's going to be links in the show notes too, that they're raising money to get those folks paid, because the actors here, we're not talking about like Patrick Stewart, Bill Shatner. We're talking about folks who are people who are actually hurt by losing that money, we'll just say. So we want to get Aaron's wife the money that Aaron was owed. And we also want to get the other actors the money that they were owed, because they came and did their thing. They were all super generous with their time and really awesome, and they deserve to get paid. So there'll be show notes there'll be a link in the show notes for that GoFundMe. So if anybody's interested in throwing a couple of bucks their way, that would be awesome.
That's fantastic. Definitely check out that link. And another philosophy question for you, big brain, Aaron. Why is there no such thing as a legitimate conference organizer?
is it just me? I think it's like a cult leader thing where there's just, we need more quality control on our conference organizers and cult leaders.
Yeah. Well, right after we start our cult, we'll...
right after.
A good conference organizer is very hard to find, worth our weight in gold, because, it's rough out there. But that's a story for another time. Let's hop on over to our After Dark, and we will talk about, among other things, the A-plot of the show that we all watched, which was not worthy of the main episode. All right, we'll see patrons right on over there. Go to patreon.com/zeroG. We'll see everybody else next week.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/zeroG, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
Yes.
So why is a shapeshifter, his default mode is most disgusting looking thing that you can possibly be. Like, what are you just, why wouldn't it be Brad Pitt?
Do you want the real answer?
Give me a second to finish my finely worded question.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/zeroG. You can find us on Twitter at zeroG Philosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.